Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition, a history lesson for your kids.
Okay, Manton, I hope you made it through the last week without any database losses or server crashes.
Yes.
Or any other catastrophes or moderate catastrophe affecting your business.
I did. At least I hope I did. One of the problems that I talked about before is not having good enough monitoring to see when I have problems. So as far as I know, everything's good, but there's still a lot of work I can do to improve being notified when the server's about to melt down.
Right. It's like if you have customers, you always have one fail-safe monitoring system, but you'd always prefer it if it doesn't get to them being that monitoring system, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But speaking of crashing and burning,
what a segue.
Yeah.
I know. The daily. We have to touch on it. I'm sure folks are getting tired of hearing about it by now, but what happened with the daily, Manton? Are they announcing that they are expanding and moving into new territories and taking on ever greater demands of tablet journalism?
Yeah, unfortunately not. They are closing down, and I don't know, it's a shame. I don't subscribe anymore, but I liked what they were trying to do, and they had a bunch of subscribers, but they just obviously couldn't make it profitable at this point. Too much overhead, too many people to build. I was going to say build an app, but that's not really the problem. Just to produce that content every single day.
Well, that was, Marco Arment's take on it, was just that the costs were so high for what they were trying to do, right?
Right.
I mean, it's an interesting perspective coming from him, because he obviously makes a product in the magazine that is in some ways comparable. It's a closed platform publication in which you cannot, you know, at the time of publication, you can't share that information with people outside the app, which is, I think, a lot of the same criticisms that the Daily got. And it's one of the frustrations I had trying to use it. It was like, okay, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to open up this dedicated app just to read this stuff from, you know, a company that's curating the news or something, and in a way that I can't even link to.
Yeah, I think those early versions too got hit kind of hard, at least in, you know, our friends and people who care a lot about these apps. It got criticized because it had a couple of quirks and just, well, I think part of it is we were expecting, I think the idea of an iPad magazine was so great. We really wanted it to be awesome, and it was really good when it launched. But it wasn't perfect. And so I think maybe expectations were needed to be kind of reset. And over time they've obviously improved. I mean, a lot of developers have touched this code by now, but the app has gotten a lot better. The content has probably gotten a lot better. But I think in those early first few days, it didn't quite live up to expectations of what it could be, just because the idea is great. And it's a shame that they're stopping, because even though it didn't work out business-wise, they really are throwing away kind of a head start in this idea. If anyone wants to do this again, it's going to be really difficult.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, however, I don't know if it's great now. Do you know if it's great now? Does anybody know?
Well, the app is a lot better.
So you know, because you've used it.
Oh, yeah, I've used it. I used to read on it a little bit. And like I said, I don't subscribe anymore. But when it was free, I got in the habit of reading it. And then I think I subscribed for a little while, like, I don't know, a few weeks or something. I don't read the regular newspaper, and it's a replacement for a regular newspaper. Like, we get the printed newspaper delivered on the weekends still.
Right.
Not entirely sure why. You know, we read like the front page and a few other things, and kids read the comics. And
you get the paper delivered as like some kind of like history lesson for your kids.
Yeah, exactly. Right? This is what, remember this in a few years when no one can possibly deliver a big bundle of ads and a few news stories to your driveway. So it's a replacement for that, right? And that was great, and was also bad, because you're paying for something that you don't necessarily want. You know, maybe not everyone wants, and I think Marco pointed this out, or maybe John Gruber, you know, not everyone wants the sports section every week necessarily. Not everyone wants the entertainment. So,
right.
You know, maybe they should have gone a little more focused. Maybe they should have launched with just like headline news kind of stories, and had a fifth the staff, and then kind of grown it out from there once it was profitable.
Yeah, something like something. I was thinking about this actually because, you know, the Mule sponsored or created site evening edition. And I was thinking, wow, you know, the Daily is gone, and that's another one that's sort of like comparable in some ways to the name, you know, the evening edition. The first thing I thought was, now that the Daily's gone, who is going to be the first person, company, whatever app to jump on the apparent freeness of this name? Because it's a pretty good name, right?
Right.
I mean, if the Daily's just outright going out of business, then what's to stop Manton from starting the Daily? Right.
Yeah, with my staff of 100 people.
Right. Well, getting back to the complexity of the Daily, one of the things, you know, I asked, have you actually run it lately? Because I haven't, and I think that just reinforces the point you had that, you know, it has to blow you away at the beginning, and then furthermore, no matter how much they have improved it over the years, it has to be improved then to an extent that it becomes like buzz. Mm-hmm. That draws you back in to give it another try. And this is actually relatable to all software projects, you know, like, yep. There's sort of that, like when you're working on a 1.0, you know, I always encourage people ship your 1.0, get it out there, get some feedback. But then there's the kind of real hesitation that people have sometimes to let too many people see the 1.0, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's that weird split. At the beginning, you want enough people to see your work to give you the feedback and to hopefully support you financially. But you don't want 5 billion people to see it and decide on that first day whether or not they're ever going to run it again.
Right.
Well, I take that back. You do want 5 billion people to see it. But you know what I mean? Like, you don't get a chance for those. It's much harder to give those people another chance once they've seen it. So,
And like I said, I think people were too harsh on it at the beginning. I mean, there was a couple performance issues, but those were really fairly quickly fixed. Of course, it's the App Store and nothing is quickly fixed. I mean, you know, still the quickest you could turn around that stuff is a couple weeks or whatever. And it obviously months later until you sort of improve more significant parts of it. But like you said, it's hard to get that second chance. And maybe one of the mistakes they made was not having like a 2.0 relaunch a year later, make a big splash and say, we've added this feature to the app and we've added like a new section of content, or we've hired a new writer that you've heard of or something.
Right.
And then give people a second chance to look at it, and they'll look at it and they're like, oh man, this is really improved. You know,
that's a good point. Yeah. Something like a big 2.0. Because that actually is also instructive for us in the software business in general, is that when you do come out with a new big release, that's when you do draw people back to give it another look. You know, like Mars Edit 2, Mars Edit 3 came out suddenly out of the woodwork. Come these people who say, oh, I haven't tried it in 5 years, but I just checked it out. So that's a good point. I think they could have done, at least when you have the millions and millions of dollars going into something like this, that would have been a good try, at least on the way out the door, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing. I mean, I haven't read about all the decisions that led up to this. Obviously, they restructured a bunch of things, right? Not just the Daily. I don't know what the other things are, but I can't help feeling that maybe they've made the wrong choice, where they're restructuring the company, but maybe they should have put more emphasis on the digital-only content and sort of expanded that instead of killing that off.
Yeah, I have one other reflection about the Daily, which is that, you know, the whole point of something like the Daily is supposed to be to sell, you know, news and opinion, right? Content, newspaper style content to people. So if you're going to do that, you would think you should be focused utmost on creating great content. One of the things that differentiated the Daily was that they were going for building a unique style of app. Mm-hmm. Right. They're trying to establish, like you said, they're trying to stake out this like unique iPad only format for the content. And that meant that they had to put all this money into weird stuff, like weird widgets in the app. You know, I talked to somebody who was the person who worked at the consulting company that worked for, you know, that subcontracted for this consulting company that contracted for the Daily.
Right.
And this guy wrote the decent but necessarily sort of, you know, just functional crossword app for the daily. Huh. So there's this crossword app in your news app.
Right.
And you think, well, all this work going into something that's main point is to get newspaper stuff to people. And then you're just going to keep all that technology for yourself. It's like, it's kind of like they needed to either decide whether they were going to be the company that makes the software that every newspaper wants to use, mm-hmm. or do they want to be the company that makes the content that every reader wants to read? And maybe they found themselves sort of caught between those two demands. But all that time spent working on a crossword app for, right. I mean, imagine if Marco Arment was making a crossword app for the magazine.
Right.
You know, he's got enough challenges just trying to figure out which fonts to include and whether to support, you know, bookmarks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the custom jumble software. don't forget the classified ads, right? And it's like all this stuff that's just like almost like, it's almost like skeuomorphic in a way, just like make it look enough like a real newspaper that people are comfortable with it.
Right. And then they did some iPad only things that maybe went too far in the opposite direction. Like the interface is completely different when it's in landscape versus portrait. When you turn a newspaper, printed newspaper sideways, nothing crazy happens.
Right.
So, but again, like you said, I mean, some great developers worked on this app to get it to launch. And then later other developers took it over. It's been a couple years now, I guess. A lot of people have worked on this, a lot of really good developers. And maybe if there had been more focus and less crossword widgets, you know, maybe it could have turned out a little better. But like I said, I mean, I think people were too harsh on the app at launch. And it's just a shame they weren't able to relaunch it or have a 1 year, you know, here's all the cool stuff we've done. Let's get some more subscribers.
Well, see you later, The Daily. It was nice to run you once back when you launched.
Yeah. All right. For the third time in a row, we're happy to be sponsored by Nucleos, a toolset of native iOS controls brought to you by the UI and UX experts at Infragistics. Built for performance and style, Nucleos maximizes your ability to create elegant, highly responsive iPhone and iPad applications. Nucleos's data visualization capabilities are unparalleled, render iOS charts with hundreds of thousands of data points capable of millisecond updates, sparing nothing to achieve lightning speed. The Nucleos grid control can handle massive volumes of data and help with brilliant, meaningful data visualizations. Take advantage of a powerful API that is familiar to all iOS developers. Nucleos will thrill you to the core. Find out more at infragistics.com/iOS. So again, thanks for sponsoring the show again. Daniel, last week you talked a little bit about the grid controls. And, you know, if any listeners have had a chance to check out the example apps, you can see some of that. They also have a bunch of charting tools. So in addition to just simple graphs, they take care of stuff like labels, legends, trend lines in charts if you need that. And they have some good examples showing a bunch of different styles, things like loading from a CSV file to populate your data source.
Yeah, and you know, another thing I noticed when I was checking out those charts in the sample app is this all seems to be really well tuned for animation. So some of the examples show, you know, as you change the inputs on the various charts and graphs, it'll just do this really cool, like, smooth transition between the, you know, the various graph points. So it looks like this was really designed by folks who understand the needs of, you know, people who want to put these kinds of charts into apps. So thanks again to Infragistics. Again, this week, they're offering a free $500 subscription to the framework. And we're going to give it away the same way we did last week. Manton picked a random number and we assign it to one of our Twitter followers at CoreInt. And this week it is Hans Martin Kern, HM Kern on Twitter. So congratulations, Hans. We'll be in touch about your free Infragistics Nucleos package. For everybody else, you can find out more about this stuff at infragistics.com/iOS. Thanks a lot.
Okay, we have a listener question this week from Stephen Holland. He asks, I'm a Mac and iOS developer, and I've recently discovered that someone copied one of my iOS apps for the Android platform without my consent. They've used the same name and duplicated the functionality. Do you have any recommendations on how to respond? For example, what would you do if another developer released an app called MarsEdit or Watermark that does the same things as your app, but on a different platform? I don't intend to develop for Android, and I'm mostly concerned about protecting my brand. So, great question.
Very good question. Hell has no fury like somebody taking my app and putting it, making a copy of it, and then worse than that, putting it on Android.
Ugh, yeah.
I'm just kind of teasing Android
fans,
please.
The name
please.
Is bad enough, but he does say, yes, they actually copied the functionality as well. So it wasn't just like a mistake where the name was generic and they used it by accident.
Right. I only had one experience real close to this, which is not even that, not real close, but somebody took Mars at its icon a few years ago and just decided to use it as like, I think it was like the blogging app icon for some Linux distribution. I don't know. It was really weird. It was it was like this Linux distribution was out there, and it was like, maybe it wasn't even the blog app. Maybe it was like just the internet browser or something, but they were like, this looks cool. You know, it was just like that mentality of like, if I can find it online, then I can use it. Mm-hmm. And luckily in my case, I had a pretty easy process of just kind of like letting them know. I kind of let them know as sternly but friendly as I could that it was not okay. And then they ended up just taking it out. But yeah. I don't know what I would do if I actually...
Well, you do have a trademark. On
I do.
Marsetta.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So that's good. Actually, that would be a basis for me to go forward. But like Steven says, you know, later on in his question, in his email, he said stuff like, you know, that he wouldn't want to go to paying for a lawyer and all that stuff. You know, it's the situation most of us are in. Is that we're just kind of scraping by trying to make a living off this stuff. And the idea of paying a lawyer thousands of dollars to go after this, maybe this copycat app that's not really causing you a lot of grief. It's just more of like a personal affront.
Yeah.
And like Steven says, he wants to protect his brand. I think you got to just take this kind of stuff one step at a time and see where it finds you. Like the very first... At the very least, you know, this is where you use some of those tools that have those tools of sort of mixed blessings, like the DMCA, right? Is this app being sold through the Android marketplace? In that case, is there an official sort of copyright infringement reporting procedure for that store? I would say always try to go, if possible, try to go above the, well, I take that back. The first step should just be a friendly note to the developer and say, come on, please don't do this.
Right.
But if you can't get something done, you know, the free way, the free and easy and polite way, then I would say you often have a chance going above the developer, trying to get a company whose interests are in keeping their marketplace, say, or the app store free from the taint of copyright infringement. Then try to get them to use their massive power to take care of the issue for you.
Yeah, and I think I definitely agree. Well, first of all, we should put a disclaimer in. We're not lawyers. And you, if this gets out of control and these first couple steps don't work and it's bothering you, you know, and then, you know, eventually you'll have to talk to a real lawyer if you want to go that route. And he said, like you said, he said in the email, maybe he doesn't. But I always like to hope that a friendly email can kind of resolve this kind of stuff. And I know if I was infringing on something and someone sent me an email saying, you got to stop this, I would respond and try to work it out. And in fact, in a couple cases, I've proactively changed my product names, because I was worried about this. So for example, Tweetmarker, the original name was Tweetmarks when I launched it. And I thought things were going well, I liked it. And then I realized that actually someone did have a trademark, for Tweetmarks, and Tweet is very specific, for Twitter. And even though it was a different service and he never contacted me, I was really worried about this and lost a lot of sleep over it, probably for no reason. And eventually did rename, you know, got a new domain name, changed all the documentation, changed everything. bought new SSL certificates. I mean, it's a hassle to change a name, but I ended up changing it because I didn't want there to be any problem later. I didn't want apps to be using this API and then have to change the name later or get into legal trouble.
Right. Yeah. You had a special circumstance bringing partners in to sort of be complicit in the use of this.
And that was a weird case too, that doesn't apply to a lot of things, because Twitter has attempted to trademark Tweet. And so in their guidelines, they say you can use Tweet in your app name. Don't trademark it.
Right.
We'll let you use it if it only works with Twitter. Don't trademark it. And so they've actually gone through, if you go through the trademark database, Twitter has gone through and tried to shut all of these trademarks down, including Tweetmarks. And so at first I was like, oh, maybe they'll just shut it down. It won't be a big deal. But that process is so slow that I felt more comfortable just renaming early and then moving past it.
Well, Stephen, we didn't have great advice for you, but like Manton said, we're not lawyers. So I think the key is, as with all conflicts in life, try to take the gentlest step possible to resolve the issue first and then see where you stand. All right. Well, why don't we go on to another question this week, since we've been so lucky to have a new influx come in. We have a question from Ryan Martinson, who asks, I've been married for 1 year. I used to work for myself, but now I have a full-time job with some freelance work on the side. Before getting married, my then-girlfriend took over my iMac, which is what I used to use for freelance work. So I switched everything to my MacBook Pro. But now she's taken over my MacBook Pro and doesn't use the iMac as frequently. I feel like I spend a lot of time keeping everything in a working state because I never know which machine I'll be able to use. Never mind the nightmare that is iTunes. How do you set up boundaries and manage this sort of thing? Huh, well, sounds like she really likes to use whichever computer you are in the mood to use at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know, Manton, I don't have this exact problem because there's one computer in my house that is sort of understood to be my work computer. We do share some computers. You know, we have a family server, Mac Mini, in the living room that we use for watching media, and it also does some things for my business, like my automated continuous integration and stuff like that. So I occasionally run into an issue where I have to sort of say, you know, sorry, kids, I have to stop this, you know, TV program for a second to fix something. But that's become less of a problem now because in 10.7 and later, I think, the screen sharing feature in macOS 10 lets you connect as a completely separate user with your own virtual workspace. So you don't even have to interfere with what the person is doing on the Mac if you're willing to achieve what you need through screen sharing. It sounds like that's not exactly the issue Ryan's running into, because what it sounds like to me is he needs to do something like I've done and establish one computer that's always available to him for his work. That seems like a reasonable request to make, and it does seem really frustrating. It would be like being you know, a carpenter and not having your one dedicated go-to toolbox. It would be just infuriating if every time you went to find your saw, it was, you know, had been moved or was lying somewhere around the house. I think it's reasonable if you are approaching this as a job, even if it's just freelance work on the side, it's reasonable to have your professional tools in one place available only to you. What do you think about that, Manton?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think you'll save time in the long run if you have a machine that you can count on using. Now, of course, you know, maybe that means buying a new Mac or a new MacBook or something, and maybe it's hard to justify that right now. That would be ideal. The second choice, I guess I would say, is embrace not having your own machine and just update your sort of workflow and your tools so that you can work from any machine. So, for example, put everything on Dropbox. Make sure everything is synced everywhere. So when you sit down in either of the machines, you have everything you need. Version control obviously is part of that. He mentions iTunes syncing. Don't sync with iTunes anymore. As soon as they launched iTunes Match, I stopped syncing with iTunes. I've always found it a hassle. Even after you didn't have to physically plug in USB, it's still having to deal with iTunes. I don't like, I much prefer being able to download music from any iOS device anytime I want, knowing all my music is there, managing my apps directly on the iPhone and iPad instead of having to sync. So I would say get rid of the iTunes syncing idea because, it's just a hassle. I mean, I assume because he mentioned it, they've had to deal with how do you deal with multiple iTunes libraries on different machines and not knowing which device is syncing. I would just say scrap that and use something like iTunes Match so you don't have to be syncing all the time.
Yes, I would agree. You know, I was thinking there are some third-party apps out there that try to do the iTunes syncing thing better. They're not coming to mind right now, but might be worth looking into that. But I generally agree. Like, I do find it frustrating that, for example, my wife and I each have different iTunes libraries. And the way I've come to terms with that is actually, you know, this is one of those, like, you know, first world solutions because, like I said, I have so many computers, I guess, yeah. As it turns out. You know, my wife has her own computer. I have my own computer. And then we have this central shared house server. And one of the solutions I've ended up coming to is just to make a redundant copy of our music on that central house server too. So
yeah,
it's not nearly so easy when it comes to things like music that's been, I mean, it is pretty easy. You can just approve with your Apple ID that Mac, but to be honest, I haven't tried sharing both of our Apple IDs on one Mac. So I'm not sure how well that works.
Yeah. Well, good luck. Thanks for the question and hope you can work it out. If you can't get a new computer, hopefully you can come up with a way to get this stuff synced better or just kind of a workflow that allows you to not have to jump through a bunch of hoops when you want to get something done.
Yep. Thanks again for the question. Folks, it's been great to have some new questions come in. So if you have questions for us or just ideas of things you'd like us to talk about, drop us a line at feedback@corent.org. So Manton, we talked last week about how, you know, Thanksgiving is a pretty innocuous holiday. And one nice thing about Thanksgiving is there are typically no formal gift requirements. Of course, a whole slew of winter holidays of your choice are coming up that do involve gift giving. And now it's that time of the year when I'm like taking inventory and thinking about all the things that I would normally just, you know, another first world benefit, normally just like buy from Amazon Prime and stepping back and saying, oh, I could let somebody else buy this from Amazon Prime for me. What are you up to this year? Do you got anything big on your holiday wish list?
For me, no. I'm mostly excited about the stuff for the kids because a lot of times the kids stuff is also fun for the parents.
Right.
So the Wii U is on our list. Big giant Lego sets, all sorts of stuff like that. Now I'm actually kind of right now doing the opposite. I'm finally getting rid of some stuff. Too many iOS devices, and after using the iPad Mini for a few weeks exclusively, I picked up my iPad 2, and the iPad 2 is actually, I think, a little bit thinner and, you know, lighter than the 3 and 4 even. I picked up my iPad 2. That thing is so heavy. it's like, I can't believe I used to use this. I loved it, but compared to the Mini, it's so bulky. So I'm selling that off, sell off the iPad 1. Going to finally get rid of a few of these things. So we'll be getting a bunch of new things in for the holidays and then hopefully letting go of a few things as well.
Our add that to our list of first world woes, suffering, suffocated under a pile of heavy iOS devices.
Yeah.
Oh, it hurts my hand to lift this iOS device.
I can't read a book just holding it with one hand.
Well, we were pretty lucky. And speaking of Thanksgiving, last week, we're pretty lucky to be able to complain about all these little nuanced details of beautiful iOS devices that perform miracles in the palm of our hand.
Cool. Well, it was good talking to you this week. We'll talk again before the holidays, but thanks everybody for listening to the show.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at CoreInt, and we'll be doing another giveaway for that Nucleos prize package.
Cool. See ya.